Welcome to Storytime with Managers, a podcast by Cohere. Hi, I'm Jennifer Tu, and I'm here with Adarsh Pandit to talk about leading without authority. Adarsh, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hey, Jennifer, how's it going?
Good.
I'm happy to talk a little bit about myself. So I'm a consultant developer. I run a company called Cylinder Digital, and we build custom software for other companies and help them solve their business problems. Either sometimes it's internal tools that we build for them. Sometimes it's customer-facing things. Sometimes we're doing engineering or design support. But we get a lot of joy out of helping other companies do things with mobile and web products.
Cool. The reason why I immediately thought of you as someone I wanted to bring on to Storytime with Managers is I've met several people who have worked on a team with you, and every single one of them will light up whenever they think about that experience and about the role that you played. And I think all of them have experienced that with you in a product capacity. Does that sound right to you?
That sounds embarrassing. but yeah, I mean, it's nice to hear that. I appreciate that, certainly. But yeah, I mean, I really have, in my capacity as a leader, I've really tried hard to be an enabler more than a person that's in charge, to try and help people have a good time at work. It's something that I've struggled with a lot over the course of my career, enjoying the work that I do and finding it satisfying. And so that's the thing that's in the back of my mind most of the time when I'm at work.
Yeah. When you start a new project or join a new team and you're thinking about how do I maximize the enjoyment of these people I haven't met who I'm going to be working closely with, what do you do? Can you kind of break that down a little bit about how to get started on that?
Sure. So the first and foremost, one of the, I don't know if I have a systematized or clear plan in place for achieving that, but here are the things that I guess I'm always thinking about. First and foremost is trust. For the teams that I run and also for my client relationships, trust is the number one determinant, in my opinion, of whether or not the work goes well, the client relationship goes well, the team gets along, or I have a good time and a productive relationship working with the team. Trust is always at the center of that. And building that trust is complicated, although it is not very difficult. There's just a lot of different things you can do to ensure that you build trust among a team.
Do you have a default for how you start to build that trust?
Yeah, there's some tactics I guess I use to try, and I guess there's two flows. One is, there are things that I do habitually now at this point to try to build up trust among teammates and clients and folks that I'm working with. And then there's also, I have in the back of my mind, kind of a radar for when that starts to go bad and some tactics to try and understand what's going on and maybe get things back on track. So some of the tactics I use to build trust are to be myself, to be an authentic person and try to be as honest as possible. I think I try to be honest without kind of, you know, doing too much, you know, giving too much TMI or anything. But I also am straightforward and share good news and bad news early and often, whenever that's possible, so that when people are talking to me, they don't have to do a lot of guessing as to whether or not I'm leading them astray or have some ulterior motive or try to, manipulate them in some way. So I try to be authentic. I try to be myself. I try to be straightforward. And so that's some work that I can do for myself. In addition to that, there's some things that I think I've observed in other people that really helps me build trust in them. And that's the same thing, which is I look for people who are really authentic and try to be themselves and have their own interests and passions and aren't very shy about them. I look for some other small things, like people who say that they are going to do something and then they do it. It's a small thing and it adds up, but I try and do this myself. If I say, let me look into that and I'll get you Let me look into that, and I'll email you about that later today. I will absolutely make sure that I write that down somewhere and do everything I can to actually follow through on that. Some of these things don't seem really that important, like, oh, well, if he didn't email me at the end of the day, I'm sure it'll happen tomorrow. But when those things start to collect, whether it's conscious or not, you start to lose some trust in whatever that person is saying. So that's, I think, important. Another one is alignment, which is kind of a buzzy, corporate-y sounding word. But what it really means is that everybody's clear on the same message or plan. And so I go through that a lot. Oftentimes in meetings, I'll start them off by saying, well, let's make sure that we're all aligned on what we know or what we believe or what the plan is. And let's align on what we want to get out of this meeting. Or let's make sure that we're on the same page about what we expect out of this project. And sometimes it can feel kind of pedantic. And if things are going really well, it can potentially be a little bit boring, but I would say most of the time there's usually some misalignment, that there's some miscommunication or there's some misunderstanding, and that can lead to confusion and that can break down some of the trust. So I guess that leads into the other thing that I focus on a lot, which is trying to be a clear communicator. It's something that I have struggled with and have focused on and read a lot of books and coaching and mentorship. And I certainly work on this a lot with my partner, my wife. And that is one where I feel like if what you say is clear and people can understand you, then it's much more likely that they're going to trust you. So I guess those are kind of the things that I would think about in terms of building and maintaining trust.
Yeah, I really like that idea of building it very incrementally and paying attention to the details, because that's how you build it incrementally. One thing I'm kind of wondering is, are there things that you can do, or maybe can you describe what day one of any project might look like? Like, do you jump right in, or do you do something specific to start building trust?
I don't really do too much that's very specific. I usually will create a lot of space to spend time with somebody and try to understand who they are, what their interests are, what their goals are, and what their context is. And context just means everything that's going on in their life that they're open to sharing, which is relevant to the project. So, for example, someone might be moving. They might be moving from one house to another, or they may have a family illness, or they may themselves have a health issue, or they're going on vacation soon and they're excited, or whatever it may be. Some of that stuff is relevant and it's good to know about. Some of it's not relevant, and showing interest in somebody else and being authentically interested in what is going on in their life is another way that you can, I feel, that builds trust among teammates. So I guess, early days, I just try to get to know people and I try to share a little bit about myself so that they feel like they know me. And I think those are the stepping stones of trying to get things off on the right foot. I also usually will start to talk a little bit about values or what's important. I'll usually say, on a project like this, these are the things that are important to me. That we all show up on time when we're supposed to be there. We're going to do what we say we're going to do. If there's a problem, that you raise your hand and we talk about it early and often. And that we have, if there are problems or mistakes, that we don't blame anyone and we try and figure them out together. And we assume that everybody's doing the right thing and they're bringing their best self to work every day. And when they can't, that's all right. We just need to know that in advance. And then that'll spark some kind of conversation. And sometimes I'll ask explicitly, what's important to you? What are you trying to get out of this project? What are the constraints you're operating under? Things like that. And I think just showing, again, authentic interest in someone else and trying to understand what they might want out of a project or work in general helps build a little bit of a trusting relationship bit by bit, such that they can start to feel like you actually do have some real interest in them. And I think that's something that comes, I think that's something that's either innate in me as a personality trait or something that I've cultivated where I actually am interested in other people. I was asking an old friend of mine about some advice for work, and it was going really well. And I had told my friend that I have finally, I think, found the job that I really enjoy, which is getting to know people, having coffee and lunch, and trying to help them out with their projects. And he said, of course, that's your thing. You like to chat with people and get to know them. And it's, I think sometimes it's only through your friends and their reflections of you that you really start to understand yourself. But that's really who I am. And I think I try to play to that strength as much as I can.
One thing that I'm thinking about is, and this is a super nitty gritty question, is I'm wondering if on day one, you're jumping right into the work. And so you're not like doing something special to establish trust. And at the same time, you're trying to learn about the people around you's goals and the context that they're in. I'm wondering what kind of questions do you use to start opening up that dialogue? And I guess not just the questions, but also how do you make that space, right? Because I imagine you might have a team of developers that, you know, they want to jump in and start getting things done.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. And developers definitely are oriented toward action. So that is difficult. I don't know. I don't know if I have specific stock questions that I ask. I'm just, I think I am interested in people and I just try to ask them, you know, I figured out early on, or somebody actually coached me on this. When I was working at McKinsey, we used to go into our clients' offices and I had a partner at the firm who really coached me on how to build some trust with the people who really didn't want to give it to us. I mean, we were these kind of corporate consultants in suits who would show up and try and figure out what was going on at this company and try and tell them what they should be doing. Anybody in their right mind would be upset and offended and not want to be helpful. And so it was an uphill battle. And what he used to tell me was, look at the desk. So we go into somebody's office, we'd meet them where they are, and we would look at their desk and we would observe. He would say, just look at the desk and start talking about what's on the desk. And it's usually pictures of people's families or vacations. Maybe it's a picture of a pet. Maybe it's a trophy from the softball tournament. There's all kinds of things on the desk. And he told me something that kind of always stuck with me, which is that they put things on the desk for a reason. And the reason is that they want to be reminded of those things and they want to engage with other people about discussing those things. So I usually, on a video call, I'll look around and I'll say, oh, where are you calling from? Or where, you know, how are things in wherever you are these days? And if it's a place that I know something about, I'll ask some questions. Or if I don't know anything, I'll also ask questions. Maybe it's that I ask a lot of questions. Maybe that's it. But I usually will just check in with people and see how they're doing, see what's new, or I don't know. I don't usually do news and weather as much as I just kind of ask people where they are, what they're doing, what they're up to. And then I think I find that most people do want to share a little bit about themselves. And then I just try and listen. And I think maybe that's another good one, is that's another skill that I'm not great at, but I know is important and I am working on, which is being a great listener and being a reflective listener. So I don't know. I don't know if I have specific questions really, as much as I just kind of chit chat.
Well, digging in on maybe not the specific questions, but the approach is really helpful. Like pointing out the looking at someone's desk and finding items to engage on from the desk is a really helpful thing to point out. I wonder if you ever have situations where you go on site, and there's a very common trend these days where developers might not have a lot of personal space, so they might not have the space to really customize their desk. And I wonder if you've been in that kind of a situation and what you turn to when that happens.
Yeah, that's a good point. Open plan offices are definitely the rage these days, and they can be really difficult to have conversations in, much less get work done. I'll usually say, let's get a coffee. Why don't we go for a walk? Or do you want to get a snack? Let's get out of here, kind of thing. And something about leaving the desk and maybe the work area also loosens people up a little. And walking around, they'll bump into friends and say, oh, hey, this is so-and-so, they're a consultant, they're working with us these days.
Yeah.
And that can be a positive thing, I think.
Oh, yeah. It's like how anytime I go on a walk with someone, they immediately know that I love dogs and I love looking at dogs. I love petting dogs. I love getting slobbered on. And it's something that's really easy for someone to notice once we go out of the office.
Yeah, for sure. I'm the same way, although I love being outside. I just find excuses to wander outside as much as possible. Just even for 5 or 6 minutes, I'll just go stand outside. And I just like, you know, we live here in California and we're lucky to do so. And I feel like as much as I can, I should take advantage of that.
Yeah. I kind of want to switch tracks a little bit and dig into what happens when things don't go right. So what happens when trust breaks, or when you thought you had realigned the team and then you find that it's again out of alignment? Do either of these sound more interesting to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely happens all the time. And it's not something that can be avoided, certainly. I think that the things that I like to do are to, first of all, just call attention to the fact that something's weird. And sometimes I'll say it that way. Like, is something weird going on? Like, or I'll leave a meeting and maybe I didn't understand what was going on, or someone seemed angry, or there wasn't really an agenda. There was an agenda and nobody followed it. I'll step out of a room with somebody that I feel I have a good amount of trust with and say, that was weird, right? Was that weird? It seemed a little weird to me. And then they'll say either, no, what do you mean? And then, you know, that'll start the conversation. Or they'll say, oh, yeah, for sure. So once, if something's weird, it usually means that there's a misalignment of some sort in expectations. So I think the thing to do typically is to try to immediately understand what everybody else's expectations are, and then try to convey what my expectations were, or my understanding, and then just compare and contrast.
Do you do that one-on-one where you reach out to people one-on-one to get their impressions, or do you do that in a group or something else?
I used to do it more one-on-one, and I think the busier and busier that I get, or the more time-constrained I get over time, if a meeting, these days more and more, I will not reject meeting invites, but I will prompt people prior to meetings to say, what's the goal here? What are we trying to get done? What's the agenda for this meeting? Agendas for meetings are maybe a little corny, but they're one of the, I think, the most helpful ways to align on expectations. And they're one of the best ways to get a productive meeting underway. And so if there isn't an agenda, or if we're off base, I think my patience for waiting to see what happens is lower and lower as time goes on. So I'll just raise my hand and go, I thought we were talking about this today. Maybe I misunderstood something. And I usually start there also. I think it's important. Maybe one piece of this that feeds into this leadership without authority is some amount of humility and the balance between saying, well, look, I'm pretty experienced in a lot of things. And so I know some things, but I don't know everything. And the balance between kind of expertise and humility is a tough one to strike. But I do use that a lot. And it is helpful to practice for me when I say, listen, I don't really know what's going on. Maybe I misunderstood, or I'm not really understanding what's going on, but this is my understanding. And so I'm definitely prone to stopping meetings midway and saying, hold up, wait a second, what's going on here? And then facilitating some kind of discussion where, again, everybody kind of shares, well, this is what I thought, this is what I thought. And then finding some alignment thereafter.
Yeah, that sounds like a really useful thing. How do you know when to speak up? Like, do you speak up right away, or are you looking for some indication of when to raise your hand and say, what's going on here?
I don't know. That's a good one. I think to some extent, I think it has to do with how comfortable I feel in the meeting. And it's not like I walk into every meeting and I feel totally comfortable. I was just in a meeting yesterday with a client that had 18 people in the meeting. And it was a somewhat constrained room also. And so in those cases, I really start to be a lot more quiet because there's just a lot of voices in the room. And I don't know everybody. Even if we do icebreakers and so on, I don't necessarily have the same level of trust as everybody else. So in those cases, I'll do a lot more note-taking and say, okay, here are some things I want to talk to people about afterwards, or questions I want to ask. One thing I also like to do is if people use jargony words or acronyms, I'm not that shy about raising my hand and asking what those mean. And I used to be, and I realized after a while that it happened so many times. I would write down the acronym and ask people later, what is that acronym? And people would say, I don't really know. We should go figure that out. And people, that happened enough that I realized that oftentimes nobody knows what those acronyms mean. And so when you raise your hand and say, what is, you know, HPQWS mean? They'll say, oh. And then a bunch of people, after the answer is given, they're nodding their heads and saying, oh, yeah, I didn't know that either. And so that, I think, can loosen up a meeting too and add to a feeling that we could really, you know, that we all have some level of humility and we're trying to understand what the best way is to go forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's safe.
Yeah, that it's safe. Exactly.
I've got one last question for you today. And that's, I'm wondering if you've ever had the experience where you go into an existing team and they all know each other, but you don't know any of them. And I'm wondering how you balance staying quiet and learning about them and jumping in and giving value immediately.
That's a tough one, but a great question. I think, you know, in situations where everybody else knows one another and I don't know one another, usually I'll try and anchor onto one person. Sometimes, to be totally frank, those situations make me somewhat anxious. You know, I can pretty quickly just become quiet and stand in the corner. But what I've tried to push myself to do is to try and stick with one person that I know. Or if I don't know anybody at all, there must be some information I have about one person. I'll try to sit next to that person. And then I'll start to try to ask them a couple of questions and say, who's here again? Like, what does that person do? Or what's their role? Or who called this meeting? Or what's the goal? Or what's the agenda here?
Yeah. So finding that person who makes eye contact with you and gestures to the empty seat next to them.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody that feels like a friendly face or a friendly voice, and somebody who can kind of help guide you through that. It's not everybody, certainly. And sometimes you definitely enter meetings where that person just isn't in the room and you have to kind of figure it out after the fact. But that's usually, I think, what I do is try and find somebody that is sympathetic and interested in what you're doing and kind of go from there. Usually it's the person who's invited me to the meeting or the person that I've been working with most closely.
Okay, so start with one when you don't have any place else to start.
Yeah, and the other thing that I've gotten, it's taken a lot of work for me, but I've gotten a lot better at is I've just found this, I've trained myself to have a response to professional social anxiety, which is to just stick my hand out and say my name. And it works for me at conferences and networking events and with clients and so forth. And now at this point, I've done it enough that I feel pretty comfortable with it. But for a while, I really had to force myself. And that oftentimes is just a great way to get going with somebody. They say, oh, you know, you're just introducing yourself. Hey, I'm Adarsh. How are you? I work with so-and-so. I'm working on this. And then they'll say, oh, here's who I am and here's what I do. And then the next thing you know, you're off to some other conversation. You know, I like to, like I said, I try and find something to have some conversation about, be it where we are, what we're doing. You know, someone's has maybe funky shoes or a weird t-shirt or blue hair. You know, I like to just start some kind of conversation because I'm actually interested in all of those things. But those are definitely difficult situations when you don't know anybody.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being here and talking with me today about leading without authority. Thanks for listening to Storytime with Managers by Cohere. Our theme music is by Kevin McLeod, and we are edited by Bryant from Zinc. If you liked this episode and want to hear more, tell us on Twitter. We are @WeCohere.